then just keep it to yourself. Okay? Just keep it to yourself. And you can ooh and ah over the dog photos if you like. All righty. My name is Matt McDermott. I'm a SharePoint MVP, actually. This January, I was awarded for the 8th time, which just makes me feel old. But I do... Oh, we're going to get along great. I can tell you that. So I work with these four guys in a company called Aptalon, and the gal on the far side there, that's my wife. Ruby is the dog in the middle. She's the star of the show. Ruby and I travel a lot of different places together, and we compete in this crazy dog sport called agility. She is way better than me at this sport. I just kind of run along the side and make all the mistakes, and when I do, she just looks at me like, really? Because, see, whenever she gets one of those ribbons, which is really for me, she gets a toy that goes along with that, and she knows. It's crazy. I was also one of the co-authors on the SharePoint 2010 Practices books, and I also am a part-time trainer. I work with Critical Path Training, but the most important stuff is the Twitter handle down there at the bottom, my blog address, and my email address. If you have any questions about the stuff we're covering today. This is a new session for me. I kind of put it together specifically for SharePoint Conference so I can help you guys understand how display templates and query rules work together. So I'm going to keep the questions to a minimum until the end. If I've got plenty of time, I'll be more than happy to answer all the questions I can. If I miss you, email me, remind me of what I told you so I can remember the lies I told and what I have to justify. And then we'll move on. But I will definitely give you time for Q&A at the end if things go the way that I'm hoping. So we're going to talk about display templates. Display templates are how SharePoint 2013 renders stuff. Not just search results, but content by search. A lot of the controls in the UI are rendered using display templates. We'll also talk about how to debug these things. I'm going to go into some of the tools that I use for debugging, but then Corey Roth has a session right after this one. He's going to show you some of the tools that he uses, plus if you're a Visual Studio dev, he's going to show you how to do some of the debugging in Visual Studio as well. I'm going to talk about query rules. These are so cool. And then we'll talk a little bit about deployment, how you move the stuff that you're building for search, for content by search, for refinement, out of your site, the site where you made it all look cool and people came and said, wow, can I have that too? We'll talk about some of the deployment tools that you have available to you. So before we get going, I want to talk just about search in general. A user executes a query. They may execute that query by going to the search box, typing in a query, and hitting the search button. But they may also inadvertently execute a query. They might simply refresh a page on which you put a content by search web part. There's a lot of different ways that these queries can be executed by the user, knowingly or unknowingly. That's the cool part. Because then what we do is we write query rules. We evaluate the query, and if it matches certain conditions, we can take action on it. Then we send that query off to the index and we get it back. Then we evaluate. SharePoint evaluates the stuff that came back against a whole bunch of rules. And it assigns a display template based on the result type rule. What that means in SharePoint 2013 is, how many of you ever modified the search center in SharePoint 2010? Wasn't that fun? Right? Because you got a big chunk of results back. And you had to deal with the entire result set. Now we can deal with these results one at a time. And then we can, you know, display them in the search center, show them down there in content by search, do all kinds of stuff. So when I'm showing you a search center, you've got to be thinking, if you're a designer, content by search totally applies there as well. All right. So let's talk about display templates. Primarily, I'm going to be showing you search results, because display templates are related to search results. But they're also centrally located inside any library where you'd like to put them. I put them right back into the master page gallery. But then we can reuse them. So we can write it once and then start reusing it in a lot of different visualizations. And we love that. Rather than having to modify the code of a web part and have it all contained in that web part. We can also use the same technology for our refinement. So the panel down the left side, if you want to make that look better, if you want to do fancy stuff over there, it's the same process. It's not exactly the same code files, but the stuff is located in a similar place. You're using a similar technology. And so if you can do a display template, you can write a refiner. We can also use this for customization and integration with other parts of SharePoint or external applications if we choose to. As long as we can access that stuff that you want to show in your search results with JavaScript and HTML, so we're talking about REST, or we're talking about CSOM, depending on what your favorite way of developing is, then we can use this for customization as well. So when do you need a display template? Well, anytime you want to add some sort of visual cue to your search results, you're going to want to modify the display template because you're going to want to add that visual cue yourself. If you want to make the search results more actionable, for instance, maybe on a blog post search result, you want to enable people right out of the search center to be able to jump over to the author's My Site or email the author or post a like right in the search center. You want to add action? You want to modify the display template. You can also augment search results with display templates. So if you want to add additional information, people are searching for, I don't know, expense reports. If you want to rip the expense report total amount out of that Excel spreadsheet and stick it on your display template, then you need to modify the display template to add that data. So what about some kind of real-world examples of this? Let's take a customer search. So I went to Scott Hillier's BCS session. I learned how to connect search to my my customer database. I crawled my customer database, and that's what my search results look like. Down in Texas, we call that lame. Okay? And not sexy. Now, it's meat and potatoes, because I know that if I click that link, it's going to take me to the profile page. But to be honest with you, that's kind of lame. So what I call this is a rich customer. That's what a customer result ought to look like. Because what do I have? I have a clickable link to my customer's email address. I have the actual account manager who's responsible for that account. I have his presence. Okay, I can get to his My Site. I can email him. I can do all kinds of fun stuff. I was in an Olympic mood, so these are silver, gold, and bronze customers. So I have little silver, gold, and bronze medals there to indicate their relative worth to me as a searcher. I've also got a little map that I call out to Bing. I just do a REST call out to Bing. Bing has this amazing service that if you send it an address on a URL, you can get an image back of that location with the little pointer right on it. Piece of cake. All you need is a developer license and a map, the map ID, and you can get to it. Very, very easy to do. What about graphical refiners? So now we're talking about those little filters down the left side of the page usually. Well, this is what the partner level looks like, that gold, silver, and bronze. Now it's there, it's right, but it's just not sexy. So what if we add a little color? Easy. All I'm doing is using HTML color, making little divs that are square. But then again, I was in an Olympic mood, and so we did medals for that as well. Anybody from Canada here? Yeah, we all know there's no U.S. hockey team up there, right? Thanks to you. Thanks. Thanks so much. Thank you. Fourth is not fun. Okay? All right. Now, there are some graphical refiners that you get out of the box. This is the slider with bar graph refiner. So this one you get for free. So if you have data, like in this case, year-to-date sales, you wire this up to an integer or a number, it's going to throw out a bar graph for you based on the distribution of those sales. But you can also use jQuery. In this case, this is a demo that I put together based on a MVPs. We kind of tend to repurpose other people's wonderful ideas. So I'll have a blog post that I'll put up at the end of this session that has links to all the people that I ripped off so that I can give a little bit of attribution. But this is using JPlot. So using JPlot, I took the exact same company or country information there, and then threw it into JPLOT so that I have an actual pie chart refiner available for my countries. Okay? All of this uses display templates, all of this using HTML, JavaScript, a little bit of CSS. You can make this happen. So let me go into a demo and just do what I call display templates 101. I'm going to show you how to get to it. I'm going to show you how to modify them and how to create these guys. So it is your job to tell me if I forget to switch monitors throughout this entire demo, okay? Thanks. All right. So here we are on a regular search page. I'm going to do a simple search. I'm just going to search for SharePoint. And I'm going to jump over to my People tab. And one of the things that we've been working on here at Doghouse Toys is socializing our users. So we added a Twitter account name so people can opt in to being social at our company. So we added the Twitter account name to the user profile property. That way, end users can add their Twitter account name. So what I want to do is I want to add the Twitter account name right here underneath their name. To do that, I'm going to modify. Actually, I'm going to create a new person display template. So I go into Design Manager here. And in Design Manager, on Upload Design Files, there's a link that takes me to the Master Page Gallery. Now, I'll give you a tip here. And if you're taking notes, this is all, I have a huge blog post on how to do all this. I'll give you a link to how to get to it. But if I click on it, it's going to give me this URL and this Explorer view. Map this to a drive. Okay? So I've done that so that I can get back to this every time. I just open up Explorer, I click here, I'm right into my master page gallery. Saves you tons of time. I'm going to go into Display Templates, and there's one here for Search. I'm going to go into Search, and you'll notice that there are control display templates, group display templates, and a whole bunch of item display templates. I'm going to grab the item person display template and always grab the HTML file. Don't touch the JavaScript. I'm going to drag that and drop it onto my desktop here. And of course, I've recently started arranging my desktop. First thing you want to do is rename this file so that you don't step on the original file. So I'm going to call this Twitter. I'm going to call this Twitter. And I'm going to open it up. Very important right away, before you do anything else, change the title. So we're going to call this person item Twitter. That's so that when I go to pick it later on, I don't have two people items. I'm going to have mine. So be sure you change that title. Okay. Now, there's a lot of detail in this, but suffice to say, if you have managed properties, you can display them in your search results. So my administrators have crawled my user profiles. They've taken that Twitter account name and mapped it to a managed property called, funny enough, Twitter account name. And so I'm going to use that. And I've heard complaints that these files are not well documented, and I have no idea what they're talking about. Because look, here's the documentation for how to do this. Just copy that pattern. Okay? So here we go. Comma, quote, quote, colon, quote, quote, Twitter account name. Okay, then I jump over here, Twitter account name. Do one last little double check. That looks good. Okay, so now I have the reference to the Twitter account name. I'm going to drop down in the file. And right here is where the name field is. It's kind of hard to figure that out. You guys got that? It's cryptic. It's not documented, I know. You good? Name field. Okay, so we're going to create a div. I know he's writing code. Oh, no, don't worry. It's only HTML. Look, I'm using a text editor. I'm not going to compile it. Okay, I'm going to close that div. And then what I want to see is I want to see Twitter with a colon. And then it'll say something like, you know, my Twitter handle, Matthew McD. So if I uploaded this and assigned it, everybody would have my Twitter handle. Okay? Again, that would be lame. So let's fix that. I'm going to put an A tag around this, put it in anchor with an href. And close that A tag. And then in here, we're going to go HTTP. Twitter.com/MatthewMcD, right? That's what we want it to look like. That's going to reference the link to my Twitter account. But what I need to do is I need to substitute this Matthew McD and that Matthew McD with the actual result that's coming back. Okay? Now, this is not documented, but it's right here. Look, there's a sample. It uses this underscore pound equals to tell SharePoint, stop processing HTML, start processing JavaScript. Okay? So we're going to use that. We're going to go equals pound underscore. Sorry, no, we're not. We're going to go underscore. I actually have a hotkey that does this, but folks, it just makes it confusing when you're watching the demo. And then we'll go equals pound underscore. Okay, now I have to tell it to use Twitter account name. Now, it would be cool if we were done, but we're not, because it has no idea where to pull Twitter account name from. And where it pulls it from, it's documented right here, is the context, CTX, of the current result item, current item. So I'm going to paste that in the beginning of that, and now I've got it. So I'm going to take all this out. I'm going to copy it. I'm going to go right here and paste it. And I'm going to save it. Then I'm going to close this guy, and I'm going to drag him and drop him back into my master page library. Now, once I copy that back in, come on, you can do it. Once I copy this guy back in, there it goes, you'll notice that when I hit refresh, it creates the JavaScript sister file that goes with my HTML file. Anytime I update the HTML, it's going to update that JavaScript file. So if you screw it up, it's going to screw up the JavaScript file, and it'll tell you it's screwed up in the UI. Hopefully it won't do that in this demo, but just so you know, always edit the HTML. Now I have to tell SharePoint to use it. So I go into site settings, and I create a rule to tell it to use that. So that's a result type. I go into new result type, call it Twitter person. And then I drop down here. I only want this to work on people. So I'm going to tell it to use the local people results. And then right here is where I would have been screwed up if I hadn't remembered to rename the inside of the file. So right here it says Twitter, it says people item and people item Twitter. That's coming out of that title tag. So I got Twitter item. You'll notice that it's now referencing the JavaScript file. That's how you can double check. Choose save. Wait about, I don't know, that long. And then jump over and do your search. And then about that long, maybe a little longer. There it is. Okay, so now I've got a clickable link to Golden Dog Ruby. That is Ruby's Twitter account. Will has got mine, and Eric Shups' dog, Cheyenne, is up there at the top. All right, but what about Hank? Hank's not playing the game. He's not participating in the social, so I want to get rid of that at sign. So this is where we start getting into modifying your display template. So I just opened that right out of the master page gallery. I'm going to drop back down here, and what I want to do is create a condition that says, don't show the Twitter thing if that value is blank. So again, totally documented. Here's how you create a comment. I mean, here's how you create a JavaScript block. So I'm going to grab this guy, and I'm just going to create a JavaScript block. You notice it all turned green there. And then I'm going to close that block. Then I'm going to put in a conditional tag. Well, how about something like if is empty? I said it's all documented. It's all in here. In this case, I want to know that it's not empty. And again, I'm going to grab the context of the current item, Twitter account name. Okay, so now it says, if it's not empty, then run this code. Well, over here is one of those same closing tags, so I'm going to cheat just a little, and I'm going to put my closing brace, and if you watch the closing brace at the end of the Twitter account name. So it does know that that's the closing brace for that block. Okay, so I've just injected in a little conditional formatting. Control S to save. F5 to refresh, and Hanks goes away. Everything else I show you today started exactly that way, okay? Grab the display template, copy an existing one, rename it, and then you're off to the races. It all starts that way, because where's the documentation? It's in the file, okay? Verbose documentation in the file. You're good to go. Okay, so that's SharePoint Display Templates 101. And oh, by the way, these do work. So if I click here, it's going to take me out to Ruby's site. Okay. I did tell you were going to see some photos of my dogs today, right? All right. So that's Display Template 101. Everything is based on that. There's a blog post on my blog. I will post an after-session post about how to get to that and show you how to do all of that. So display templates, they are HTML and JavaScript. You don't have to write XSL anymore. Unless you're doing content query, which you can still do. And there's still some places where it's sleeping, but it's not in the search center anymore. Yay! I can't take your applause for that because I don't work for Microsoft. I didn't write it. But if you want to applaud, you can. Okay, so it's one result at a time. We love this. We don't have to now have this enormous block of if. We're dealing with one result at a time, and we use the rules to drive the result. There is also an optional hover card if you want to use the hover card. So you create an association to another display template that will save your life. Just name it underscore hover at the end so that they all group together, and you can create hover cards as well. There's other uses for them. You use them in refiners. We use them for controls, and we use them in content by search. So let's talk about the search center as an example of how these pages work. This is the entire search center. And in that search center, I have controls. You change these controls by changing the associated control template. So the refiner control, the search box, the paging at the bottom, and the entire Chrome all the way around the search results web part is controlled by a control template. Inside the refiner, those are the refinement item templates. Inside the search box, there may be grouping. Those are group templates. I know this is really confusing jargon. I'm sorry. Okay. Then there are item templates. That's what we did before with the people. We just did a people item. That would be like a PowerPoint item and a Word item. And then finally, there are hover cards. Okay, so the hover cards are associated with a display template. You create the association. So when we're looking at search control rendering, it renders the entire search control. So if you exported the search results web part, you would find that the property that controls the template that's used is called the render template ID. The group template that is used is called the group template ID. And each individual item is controlled by the item template ID. The challenge here is that when you're rendering these results, the control, the web part, only lets you change in the UI the control and the item. It doesn't let you change the group. So here's kind of a little cautionary tale to explain what that means. I'm working with a company that wants to change up the way their search results look for people. And this is a work in progress, so you'll have to give me a little bit of, cut me a little slack on the way this looks. But they want to make their people results look a little bit more, well, we used to call it Metro. I guess now we call it modern. They want them to look like this. So when you're working with a designer, the idea is we're going to show the person's face. We'll show at least four of the people that they follow. And then we'll show some of the photos or a blog post, just something in a jQuery slider. If you're working with a designer or if you are a designer and you're working on your search results, always give a prototype of like four, five, or six results so the developer can see it in context. But this is just straight HTML and jQuery. You'll notice that I just opened it as an HTML page. This is what she wants to see. So I started working on this, And I discovered this whole thing works. So this is a people search result. You notice there's Hank and Cheyenne and Ruby, just like before. And the picture part's not all wired up. But the point that's important here is that each of these is a person or an item template. But then I put the text in there. The top one above person is the group template, holding everything together, because it turns out in her design, I needed to be able to group everything. And then the outer one, that's my control template, I had to modify all three. And so when I deliver this, I have to deliver it all three at a time. And the way that I do that is I go in here, I edit the page, I edit the web part, and if I edit the web part, what I found is that under display templates, it has the control, okay, and it has the single display template. So here's the control, and then it has the single display template, but it doesn't have the group. So all you have to do is export the web part. Let me save it here to my desktop. You export the web part, and you just manually go in and find those properties. So if I go Metro. So here is the item template ID. That's the control. So I just modified these guys. I just went in and grabbed each of the properties. Wrong button. Each of the properties, here's the overall control property, and then here is my group property. That's the one I had to manually go modify. Then you upload that web part, and you're off to the races. So once you've made that connection, you're kind of good to go. So I just wanted you to know that you can control the groups, and you do it exactly that way. Okie doke. Did I say this was a lot of demos? Okay. So let me talk about the hover panels and then making external calls. So I showed you that one example, the sample that was the customer. And let's talk about how we did that. I ripped everything off right out of the search center because you can do that. Yep, leave the page. Okay, so let me do a pets search here and talk about this customer hover panel. So here's my customer. And if I hover over him, he shows the hover panel. And then I just do a REST call out to Bing with the address associated with it to get the map. Bing has a service that if you send it a properly formatted URL with a query, it'll send you back a map as an image. No Silverlight, no nothing. It's awesome. So how do we do this? Well, inside the display template, so I have this item customer display template. I'll get that. And I have an item customer hover panel. So all I did was take the out-of-the-box item default and then start messing around with it. So I added some managed properties like the salesperson's email address, the partner level, the address line 123, et cetera. And then down here, there is a hover URL. All you do is modify that hover URL. And in this case, you're going to point it to the JS file, not the HTML file. So you modify the HTML file, but the JS files are what are active. That establishes what happens when you hover over this item. Here's where you will spend hours of wasted time. You'll go in here and you'll accidentally delete this div. Don't delete that div. Don't copy, if you want to do hovers, don't copy a template that doesn't have a hover, because it's not going to have that div. That's where your hover's being rendered. If you delete this, your hovers go away, you're scratching your head trying to figure out why your hover's not working. Not that I've ever done that. It's embarrassing. Okay, so this is the item customer. Just like I did item person with the Twitter, I did that. Then I started playing around with the hover panel, because this is what I wanted, where I wanted all the coolness to be. This is where I wanted to see this map, this map, that sort of map that doesn't want to quite render there. Anyway, it must be snowing. Okay, we're good. So what I'm going to do is show you how simple that was. I drop in here. I created an anchor tag, but here's the image tag. So dev, virtual earth, rest, imagery, roadmap, etc. And then it just takes an address. So here's address line one. Here's the city. Here's the state. And you just string these together with commas because that's what Bing expects. And you wind up with an image. Now in my case, I size it 300 by 400. And then I put on the key. So I'm not, since this is being recorded, I'm not going to go any farther that way. And that key tells Bing how to render it. So that way, if I hover over this, if this was not there, it would just say there's an alt tag in there that says map with address. I echo the address, and I also show the year-to-date sales. It's all the same technology. I'm just using HTML, JavaScript, and then using those little token replacements with the context of the current item and the managed field, and you display the information. So it's the hardest part of all of this is figuring out what you want to visualize. What is relevant to your users? What is relevant to your users? Establish that hover connection, and then you can get that cool hover look and feel. Thank you much. All right. Yep, still on a gray slide. One more before we get into some content slides here. Actually, two more demos before we get into more content slides. What about refinement? That refiner panel up on the side there. Well, as I said, the refiners use the same technology. So over here, I have my partner level, okay, bronze, silver, and gold. So if I click on silver, I see all my silver partners. And then I can go down here to the out-of-the-box slider, and I can look at silver partners that have sold more than $100,000. Oh, BI! Okay. For some people, that is BI, because I just found out the three accounts that should be gold partners, because that's my criteria here. So I can use these actionable results to contact Oso and find out why he hasn't talked to the client about being a gold partner. So how do we change this to put the sexy back into these refiners? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and stretch this all out, and I'm going to edit this page so that I can modify that refinement panel. Edit the page, go into the refinement panel, edit the web part, and then there's the button here that pulls up the refiner designer. This is very cool. We can actually go in right in the UI, choose the partner level, and then we can change the display template for the refinement. I'm going to choose color refinement here. And then when you go to do this, it won't work. Because first of all, you'll notice that you don't see the OK button. So you'll click the X. Don't do that. Scroll down, click the OK button. Even if you remember the OK button, you'll be tempted to go up here and check in the file. Don't do that. You have to go OK here too. Then you can check it in. Again, not that it has ever happened to me. But again, I'm going to go silver, and I'm going to do my year-to-date sales again. And so now I've got a little bit of coolness around my silver. But I'd rather see metals, and I have to make that Canada joke one more time. So I'm going to edit the page. I'm going to go into my refinement web part, edit the web part, jump over here to refiners. And I will make all the code for this available as well. And I'm going to change this over to a metal refinement item. So my metal refinement item just adds a little bit more graphics to it. Check it in. So now I've got kind of silver, gold, and bronze. Okay? And for the sake of the Canadians in the room, I'll choose gold. And we start getting our gold. We see our gold partners there. And then you can click clear filter. So the big difference here is where are they located? I'm going to go back up to the root of display templates. The refiners are located in the filters folder, And they all are prefixed with the word filter. So if I pull up the filter metal HTML file, this is the what it's going to show in your picker. So you need to make sure you get that right. And then there is a whole bunch of code in here that does basically, it maps the inbound value, like file extension PDF, file extension Word, and throws it into buckets. I kind of ignore all that stuff because I end up just coming down here, and I get a value called refinement name. That's, if it was a file extension, it'd be PDF. If it was, in my case, it's my bronze, silver, and gold. It's the property that I chose to refine on. That's the refinement name. So that's coming in as gold, silver, and bronze. I just map it over to color because it makes more sense to me. And then I just say, if it's gold, then give me an icon file that matches my gold metal, my silver metal, and my bronze metal. And once I have that variable, I just create a new icon or a new image file or a new image reference that uses the source of my icon file. Okay, so you're just stringing this stuff together. I will not lie to you, doing a refiner is a little bit more complicated than doing a display template because of all the embedded code that's in these files. I can't imagine starting from scratch on this, but there's a lot of samples there, and like I said, there's a couple of really cool blog posts that I'll link off to from mine that show off how to do some of the fun stuff, like the country refiner that I have hiding below the full. Oh, it's not there. So let me show you that one too, just because that's kind of cool. So we'll edit that page. We'll go into my refinement here, edit the web part. Click the refiners. I'm going to choose country region. And in this case, we'll drop down and we'll choose the chart refinement item. Choose OK. Choose OK. Check the file in. And there's your chart. Okay, so that's blogged in detail. It uses JPlot. Very cool. Very cool way to show off how to do refinement. Thanks. You cannot write these without knowing how to debug JavaScript. It will drive you insane. And even when you know how to debug JavaScript, you have to have a little bit of patience with SharePoint. Anybody ever seen, I know it's kind of rare, but have you ever seen working on it? That's going on in the background, and you as a developer don't get that. You just have to go, you know, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go walk the dog. I'm going to come back, and I know it's going to be working the next morning. You will have that experience. Okay, I actually used to have all brown hair, and the hair on the side was longer, but then I just spent time with refiners, and it was hard. So let me show you how I debug these guys. And like I said, this afternoon, the next session, Corey's going to be talking about how to do this in Visual Studio. I have found that it's not terribly difficult to do using using your favorite in-browser debugging tools. So the first thing I want to show you is kind of two use cases for how you're going to do your debugging. The first is interactive debugging. So I'm going to hit F12, I'm going to bring up my developer tools, and I'm going to drop into the debugger right here. So you just click on the little bug, right? Then what you have to do is select the file that you want to debug. So in this case, I'm going to scroll down and I'm going to find my filter. I'm sorry, I'm going to find my item customer JS file. Okay? Now, to be fair, this is a very complicated file because it's been generated for us by SharePoint. Each of my special blocks are actually in here. They are, if I can get my mouse to drag this up on screen here. Come on. Really? Just get bigger for me. There we go. Okay. So here's the context. Okay, so here is, you know, a return value from some fancy method that I have no idea what it does. But then, oh, here we go. I saw this when I was in there. If is null, context of the current item. In other words, make sure the current item has a value. And then as I drop down, here are some of my values. So here's the email address so that I can get presents. Here's the gold, silver, and bronze stuff that generates my medals. Well, what I want to do is put a breakpoint in here. And then I'm simply going to restart my page. And it will break on that line of code. If I do next, it's going to break because it just hit the next customer, one result at a time. So this is nice because I can hover, I can see the context of the current item, I can bust this out, and I can see the values that are embedded in that. So if your values aren't showing, maybe it's a typo, maybe you typed the field name wrong. But you'll be able to look and see whether those values are showing and whether they're coming through the way you expect. Okay? So I love this. But the problem is when you go to debug a hover panel, this is way too intrusive because it's going to break every time you hover. So let me show you what I mean. I'm going to set a breakpoint inside the customer item. The item customer hover panel. Oh, and here's the other thing. You see it's not there? It's because I haven't hovered yet. So let me hover. Refresh my page here. And let me hover. And then I'm going to go in and debug that hover panel. So here is item customer hover panel. And I'm going to put a breakpoint just somewhere down here. Doesn't really matter. Now, you'll notice I'm moving the mouse very gingerly. I'm getting it around the page because what happens is if I refresh the page and hover, it breaks. So now I can step through my code. I can hover and debug, but it's not showing me my hover panel. It's kind of annoying. If I run, the hover panel shows, but then it breaks as soon as I hover again. Very, very intrusive. So what I've found is a different technique. Instead of using breakpoints when I do my hovers, if I go in, and let me find one of my log lines here. Here it is. So you see where it says console.log, and it says hello SPC, and then I'm going to post the year-to-date sales number. I'm just going to stick that value in here. So use console.log when you're doing your hovers, because now I've taken my breakpoint off. I'm going to go ahead and run. I'm going to refresh my page, okay? And instead of using the debug sign, I'm going to go to the console side. We'll clear out the console, and if I come over here and hover, it says, hello, SPC 5,000 or 50,000. You see that? If I do another hover, like if I drop down here to riders, 45,000. If I scroll, okay, so it's putting those values in, and I still get the interactivity with my hover. Okay, so I can hover, I can use the console. I never do this with one monitor. I always have my two monitors, so I've got everything that's going on over here, and I can watch the console go by. And then if I see, values are coming out incorrectly in the console, then I can jump in and start putting in breakpoints in my hovers to make sure that stuff's working. But this is a very powerful feature. It's not just in the IE dev tools. It's in, you know, if you like using Firefox, it's in Firebug, it's in the Chrome tools. It's there for everything. And it's just a really nice way of getting some debug information out of your out of your panels. So just a couple of ideas for how you can interactively debug your scripts. Alrighty. How's everybody doing? You good? Okay. So that's display templates. That's putting the sizzle into the visuals. Now what I'm going to do is talk about interacting with your users in creepy ways. That's what you use query rules for. So with query rules, in 2010, we had these things called best bets. And frankly, best bets were a great idea. It's just the implementation was kind of limited. I usually use another L word, but we'll just say it's limited. So I'm going to show you how you can use them to do better best bets. I'm also going to show you how you can detect stuff about the user and then take action on that. And along the way, I'm going to make fun of some salespeople. I'm also going to talk about this very cool concept that I call, well, I was told is called intent rules, which means I know what you're looking for and you're terrible at searching, so let me help you out. The last thing I'll leave you with in the query rules section is something I call natural language query. Now, how many of you saw Office Graph? If you did not see Office Graph, after you're done here, download that video, because Office Graph is truly amazing. That's not what I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you how you can take a user's intent with the way that they're typing and turn that into a very sophisticated query. So let's start out and let's just talk about the creating a simple query rule that helps figure out a best bet better than we used to do in 2010. So I work with the design crew, and they have incredible design skills. And one of the things that they're trying to do, we're trying to do, is get people to attend the SharePoint class in Austin. Okay, so the SharePoint class is in Austin, so my mad skills designers put together this. Isn't this epic? I mean, doesn't it just make you want to click on it? Okay, so there's a SharePoint class in Texas, and if you click on it, it actually takes you to the training site. So they put together this little file, and what I want to do is I'm going to make this into a best bet. So I'm going to go into my site settings, and I'm going to go into my query rules. And I'm going to tell it I want to use a query rule when somebody is searching all the local SharePoint results. I'm going to create a new query rule. We're going to call it SharePoint Training. And I'm looking for a query that basically contains some words that they may use, like SharePoint. Maybe they'll use SPS. Maybe they'll use MOS, which means we really need to get them into training. WSS. Then I'm going to go in, I'm going to add what's called a promoted result. Now, if you just add the title and the link, it's like the 2010 result. What I'm going to do is render this as a banner. Anybody using FAST would know this as a visual best bet. And then I have some other settings that I can play around with, like I can change the publishing. So in my case, I'm going to start this now, but I'm going to end this on the 15th because that's when the day of training is. So I don't want this to show up after that. There's also a review date I can put in if I want so that somebody can get an email to say, come back and check out your query rules. So now that I've got that in, somebody searches for SharePoint, and right away they get the banner. The banner is clickable. It does take you to the training site. So the clickability is built into the banner itself, right? It's in the ASPX file that I posted, but the search center just renders that banner for me. You'll notice it's at the top. That's where these guys go. And then I've got other rules that are running below it. So that's essentially how you create a better best bet than before, because now we can have much more sophisticated query, much more sophisticated detection of what the end user typed to be able to get that best bet to show. So the next one that I want to show you is how we can actually work with the end user. But you have a bunch of options when you're creating a query rule. The rules run on a specific result source. So people, all SharePoint results, or any other result source that you create. In 2010, we called result sources scopes, so you can kind of think of them the same, although result sources are a lot more powerful than that. They also have to match certain options. It could be a keyword like the one I put up. It could be a keyword like SharePoint, but it can also be an action term, and I'll show you what an action term is in just a sec. You could also have it run against a dictionary. In other words, you could tell the marketing people to maintain a list of what the words are in the managed metadata service, and your rule would pull from that term set, so they don't have to come in and change the rule every time. And then at the end, I'll show you the advanced text match. We can use regex if we want. Then there's the action. What do I want to do when this happens? Well, I did a promoted result, a best bet, but I can also do a result block. I can show you more files with your query. And I'll show you those in the next couple of samples. And you can also change the rank of results. So I can actually game the result set and say, they executed this query, and you know what? The stuff over here is way more relevant than the stuff you're looking at on this tab. So for instance, what if somebody typed in pets, and I wanted to go get results off of that customers tab? Well, I could pull that over and show you those as a result rank change. And then finally, I have publishing options. You can have these start later in the month, later in the year. You can have them expire. So let's talk about detecting the user. Anyone here work in sales? Do you have a thick skin? So here's the thing. I know none of you have ever had this happen, but how many of you work with salespeople that upload a document and lose it right away? They can't find the document library where they just uploaded the document. It's in the sales site. We all know that, right? Okay. So I love my salespeople, but occasionally it's a challenge. So here's the deal. What I want is I want my end users to be able to do a search, but also see a block of results that's the stuff they uploaded. I used to have to do this with custom programming. Now I can use query rules. So I'm going to go into my site settings. I'm going to go into query rules. I'm going to do this on my SharePoint results. And I'm going to get rid of this SharePoint training one because it's going to be in our way. And then I'm going to create a new query rule. This is going to be called your documents. I really don't care what they're searching for, so I'm going to remove that condition, and I'm going to add a result block. This is going to be your results for whatever the subject term is they put in. Then I'm going to launch the query builder. I want this to go against their original source. If they're searching for all documents, they can do that. But what I'm going to do is create a query that says where the author of the document contains the person who executed the query. Okay? If I test this, it brings back a whole bunch of stuff, some of it documents, but I've got some sites in here. So let's get rid of those sites. I'm going to do another query. In this case, there's a special little property called isDocument. And I'm just going to make sure that that equals one. How do I know this? I know this because I'm a search nerd. Okay? Test the query. It shows me just documents for me. So I'm going to choose OK. I'm going to go ahead and show them four. And then there's a setting here. This is very, very cool. I'm only for the purpose of the demo, I'm going to choose that this always gets shown at the top. That way I'm always sure it's going to show on the first page. But think about this. That radio button that says this block is ranked within the core results says maybe what they're searching for, there's more relevant stuff. And it floats the result block in relevance with the other stuff that they find. So maybe somebody wrote something that was way more important than what they wrote. Well, we can float that result block in the stream of their results. That's why it says may not show, because it may be less relevant. I'm going to choose OK. I'm going to choose Save. And I'm going to go back up here to Search Center. Let's try to search for dogs this time. Let's do a search for Control-F5. Takes a second or two for these guys to show up, but there it is. Your results for dogs. These are all documents where Willa, the user I'm logged in as, authored or is a co-author. There's no sites in there. So what if you wanted to foster teams? You could say where the user's department, the documents from the user's department. There's all kinds of different ways you can use these kinds of rules to be able to detect what the user is doing, who the user is, and attributes from the user profile to augment these search results. Okay, this is one of my favorite things to teach, which is acting on a user's intent. When you're acting on a user's intent, what you're doing is saying, I know how to search for stuff better than you, so let me help you. If I'm looking for a video, like if I type in Ruby here, I can jump over to the video tab, and there's a bunch of videos that are related to Ruby that she happens to be in. But in our company, the marketing group wants to start calling these flicks, like Netflix. So if I type Ruby flicks, or if I type Ruby flick, I get no results, because SharePoint is taking both words and applying them to my query. What I want to do is create a user intent rule that says, you know what, let me help you with that query. So I'm going to go back into site settings, I'm going to go back into query rules, and I'm going to jump down to my local SharePoint results and create a new rule. And we're going to call this one video intent. In this case, what I'm looking for is query contains action term. In my case, it's going to be flick or flicks. And then I don't know who built this thing. I don't know who built these pages, but I got to give them props. Watch what happens now. I go to add result block, and look at the difference. Search box, subject term, action terms. It knows that I'm doing an action term. It's going to get better at the last demo that I do. But it's detected that I'm doing an action term. So it says, the search box query is everything. Ruby flick. The subject term is what's not matched. Ruby. The action term is what is matched. Flick. So if I create a query that only includes the subject terms, it's only going to include Ruby. So then I launch my query builder, and I'm going to cheat because I'm using SharePoint Enterprise. I'm just going to fire this off against the video results. But I could also construct a query here that said where the content type was a video or where the file extension was WMV. So there's a lot of different ways to do this, but SharePoint Enterprise gives us a little bit of help. So now if I test my query, I get those four videos back. So we'll choose OK. We'll make four of them since we know there's four. And I'm going to do one last thing here. I'm going to actually change the display template because I like using this. There's this video item display template. So I can even modify the display templates. Again, I'm putting the block at the top just for the demo, just so the demo shows up there. Choose save here. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to delete this your documents one because I don't want him to show up. Go back to the search center. Ruby flick, and I get my videos. Okay, thanks. This was not my idea. This is already built in. How many of you have SharePoint 2013 running somewhere? Somewhere? Do this. If I type SharePoint deck, there's already an intent rule. SharePoint knows that a deck is a PowerPoint file. That's how I found out how to do this. I went, how the heck does it know there's a deck? Now, if you build decks for a living, this is not going to be a great demo. But if you do doc, it'll show you that as well. So there are two intent rules in there already. You can go in and take a look at those. You can strip them out and look at them. They're built into SharePoint. These are called intent rules, and they are just simply awesome. All right, so detecting and acting on natural language. You guys good? Everybody happy? Okay, here we go. I've done this demo where we do content. I do a half-day search session where we do content enrichment. We take a photo with a phone that has a GPS in it. We geolocate the image. Then we do a display template that shows the geolocation of the image. And then we get to the demo I'm about to show you. So what we do is we take the latitude and longitude off of the image so that if I'm searching for, I don't know, if I'm searching for Ruby and I find one of her pictures here, like Ruby's first title. So this one happens to be, this is a photo I took of Ruby in Belton. Wow, that was weird. Here's one. This is Ruby in Carmel Beach, okay? So you'll notice that it says Carmel, California. The phone gave me the latitude and longitude. The phone embedded latitude and longitude on the image. I simply ripped that off as part of the managed properties and displayed it on the template. Then I do that same REST thing that I did with the customer, and I send it out, and I show you that that was actually taken in Carmel, California. You guys good? You totally know how to do all that now, right? Just play this at half speed. You know how to do all this. And then just rip off all my code. That's fine. It's out there. It will be out there. But I should point out that this is the happiest dog face on the planet. I mean, she has so much fun there. Okay. That's all these sessions are, is a gratuitous opportunity for me to show you photos of my dog. But what I wanted to show you is that using these managed properties, I can now do some really cool things. I can detect what people are typing, like photos of Ruby taken in Carmel, and I can actually go right down and find, do a property-based query based on what I just typed up there. Because I throw out the photos of and the taken in, and I go, people in media, Ruby, location, Carmel, and I get that query. So let me show you what that rule looks like and talk to you a little bit more. I got a man crush on whoever wrote this query designer, because this is so totally cool. I'm going to go into query rules, and I'm going to go to my local SharePoint results, and I'm going to type that same query here. That would be photos of Ruby. Actually, let me show you the rule first. It's this one. Photos taken of a subject in a location. This is some very, very ugly looking. This is some very ugly looking regex. Case insensitive photos of, then do a capture group called subject and grab whatever that is. Okay, this is regex. I don't know regex. Okay, but I figured this one out. Taken in. It'll break if I use a capital T. That's how bad I am at regex. But then location is another capture group. This is why I love this whole thing. Remember I showed you that action rule? Well, in this case, since I'm using regex, when I go to edit this, look at what this thing does. It says, oh, you're using regex. There's subject and there's location. So now I can use subject and location in my query. So then I create a query using the query builder, where people in media is subject and location is location. It does the token substitution for me and executes incredibly powerful queries. Why does any of this matter? Because you can create, using this technique, you can create your own search jargon. I have a customer that was having trouble searching for specific part numbers. They wanted to type in a part number and just have SharePoint return those items. So what we did is we created this rule that if you do PN and a number, and all we had to do is teach the customer people, hey, type in PN and the number and we'll find that thing for you. If you have a knowledge base, type KB and a number and it comes back. So you can create your own search vernacular, your own search language using these kinds of rules. Really, really cool stuff. And then you can put pictures of your dog in your portal and show those to people. All right. So, one more thing I have to gush on. I'm going to go back out to the query rule designer here. So, I'm going to type in photos of Ruby taken in Austin. Now watch what happens. See, it says test a query. So I've just executed the query in this page. How many of you have ever looked at a SharePoint administration page and gone, wow, they kind of could have done a better job? I know, it's a foreign experience. I have no idea how they could have done anything better than what they did with this page. Because look what this actually shows me. It is a debugging tool. It shows me, there's my regex at the top, there's my search box query, there's my subject terms, subject equals Ruby, location equals Austin. It's actually ripping out my query and testing it against the rules, and it's also showing me all of the other rules that apply. So you may be wondering, how did I figure any of this out? Because, you know, in the great oral tradition of SharePoint, none of this is documented. Well, I happened to mishit the hashtag, and then I put in a tag, and look, there's this query rule down here that matches. When you type hashtag, it's going to search for tags in SharePoint. Well, how does it know that I typed a tag? Well, it's the hashtag. So there's the regex that does before. That's the capture group. I looked at that and I said, wait a second, right there it says search term is SharePoint, but the tag name is SharePoint. So it's using that tag name replacer. There's other fun stuff you can do. I created one for Bing that I wanted to search. If somebody types the word Bing and then does a search, it's going to send that search out to Bing. So you can do this something like this. Go to your search center, type Bing, SharePoint. And that's going to go out to Bing, and it's going to throw in a search result. It's not going to search my local box. Well, it will, but in the result block, do I have an internet connection? I do. It's just running a little slow. But it uses that keyword Bing and then passes the next word out to SharePoint, and apparently that's not happening. It should. So there's a lot you can do with your query rules. There's a lot. There it goes. So now it's getting these search results from Bing. So kind of cool, kind of fun stuff. All right, when is he going to stop talking? Well, pretty quick. How do you get this stuff out? How do you move this from development to production, development to test to production, my site to your site, right? If this was SharePoint 2010, I would say open SharePoint Designer over here. Open SharePoint Designer over here. Cut and paste. But you don't have to do that. There's actually deployment options for your search results and your display templates. The display templates can be moved around using Design Manager. They're also just files, so they can be included in a feature. If you have a developer that wants to do a branding exercise and create a feature for you, they can do that. And through Design Manager, you can optionally include your search configuration. Sometimes SharePoint thinks it's optional too, even when you click the box, and I'll show you that in the demo. The other option that you have, if you're not working with display templates, is that you can simply export your search configuration. So you can export the search configuration from one site collection and import it into another site collection. So let me show you how this goes. So I'm going to jump out to the cloud because, it's all about the cloud. And so here I am on my Contoso. Oop. Dude. Okay. Dude. To be fair, the speaker, I picked the worst possible person because the speaker is totally blocking him right here. So should have come over to my buddies here in the front row, but we're good. Okay, so the folks at Contoso have put together this little portal. They did a whole bunch of stuff on blogging. So we go to the search center, and if I search for one of my blog posts, like I'm looking for my annual legal review, Regal, my annual Regal review, sure. Thank you. This is a blog post. Look at how rich those results are. Wow. That's an announcement. What am I talking about? Here's my blog post. Wow, it totally looks different than an announcement. Good thing. Well, this starts with an L, ends with an E, has am in the middle, right? It's not that great. So I've been playing around with this because when I do that same one, annual legal review, and I look at my results for my display templates, they look a little bit better, right? Not only does it show you the page that this is on, but it also shows, and I totally stole this from Michael Svensson, who has a session this afternoon. He has the last session of the conference. Go show him some love by going to his search session. But I also show the author here and the number of likes in the blog post. So you can start augmenting your blog posts by doing this. You can also cheat if you're doing your testing, and you can simply go in here if you want to see a whole bunch of blog posts and do content class : STS _ list item posts. And that'll just show you a whole bunch of blog posts, and you'll be able to see the results. You'll be able to see the results and work with them in the search center. Here's the cloud is a little slow right now. So here's a whole bunch of blog posts. It shows the author. Hover over the blog post, shows you the site, a little bit better results. Marketing folks saw that, they love it. I'm gonna give it to them. So here we go. Display Design Manager. You go here to publish and apply your design. Make sure I'm in the right site. I am. So from here, I'm gonna create a design package. And I'm going to include my search configuration, and I'm going to choose Create. It's working on it. You know, if you click this guy, it goes away, and you get absolutely no progress. Because, you know, it's so totally helpful to have that guy spinning. So just make him go away. Make yourself happy. I actually did that, and someone goes, well, how will you know it's still working? I'm like, wow, okay. So what SharePoint is doing right now is it's enumerating all of the display templates, it's grabbing all of the design files, and it is it's creating a package for me. It's creating a WSP. Since I chose to include the search config, it's supposed to include the search config, but what I have found is it doesn't always include the result type rules. Okay, it doesn't always include the result type rules. So let's see how it does here. I've tested it 3 times in preparation for doing this. Okay, so my design package is ready. Go ahead and click here to download. So I'll do what it says. I'll click there, and we'll save this guy to, that'll be a good place. So just remind me it's the 1.1 version. There we go. So that's all done. So now I'm gonna jump back here to my search center, and I'm gonna go in, and now I'm gonna apply those design files. So I go into Search Center, I publish and apply a design. Come on. Oh, sorry, back on Welcome is where this guy shows up. Come on, Welcome. Here we go, upload. You know what's awesome is when you read what this says so that you know that that's where you're supposed to click. We call that demo blindness. We've got 3 minutes on the session, and I know we're gonna nail it. So here we go. Come on. If it wasn't for the cloud, come on. Oh, do you? I thought it was right in here. You can tell how many times I've done this. I thought it was right in publish and apply. Yeah. Well, no, it's not public. This is internal. Okay. Site settings. Really? I thought it was just into and upload these guys. Upload design files, right? Oh. Back to site settings. Import design package. Thank you. Okay, browse. Okay, here we go. We'll hit it. I promise. We'll hit it. Thank you. See me afterwards. I'll find something for you. I'm going to import my design files. Ooh. Save by the audience. See, the truth is, I deploy this stuff as features. I don't use this. I don't use the interactive approach. But I started playing with it, and actually, it doesn't do such a horrible job. So once I get my design files in, I'm going to actually do 2 things because I definitely want to hit my time. I'm going to go back to my site and just show you on the original site under site settings, there is an export the search configuration. And when you click that link, it's going to export an XML package right here, search config export. And it's going to export a search config package that allows me to include my search configuration, which is that file right there. We'll go ahead and just overwrite him. Okay, so it appears that that's done, and the package succeeded. So now I'm going to go into my display templates, site settings, into my master page gallery here, design manager, page layouts and site templates, design manager. And what you'll find is that the pages are there, the design file, my new blog style is there, but that the rules aren't there. And so we need to import the search config. Wow, it's really running slow right now. It's bothering me. Come on. Killing me. So if I go in, I'll see my design file, but I won't have the rule. So I want to apply the rule, and then you'll see it. And we'll hit that mark. And while this is loading, I will answer questions. If in courtesy for the next speaker, I'm going to move out into the hall, but I'll hang around for as long as you like to answer questions. Please remember to fill out your, if you do have to leave, I understand, but please remember to fill out your evaluations. Fives get you a better opportunity to win the Ducati.